It's Wednesday, the 30th of July. I'm Alec Hogg, and welcome to the BizNews Briefing. Today, Safair, Pretoria Girls, the Gupta Mansion non-sale, companies loading up on Bitcoin, and Glynis the Gladiator. But before we get into our stories, the big issue of the moment is South Africa's likely 30% tariffs, which come in on Friday, 2 days to go until the Trump tariffs are initiated. I have a little bit more hope today than I had yesterday, and that's as a result of the tweet that you're now seeing on screen from Josh Maservi. He is a regular contributor to the BizNews cause. He is with the Hudson Institute in Washington, one of the most prestigious think tanks there, and he is the man who looks after the Africa operation. And his response to a, well, intemperate comment earlier from somebody on social media was that if there is going to be some kind of an aversion of that 30% tariff, it will be due to those who have credibility in Washington, D.C., and in particular with the Trump administration. And there read the three Afrikaner amigos, the members of the Democratic Alliance, and so on, who have been visiting and trying to state the case and saying, punish the political party that's caused the trouble. Don't punish the people of South Africa. And I guess we really, as just obvious people, and you're going to see more of that in today's briefing, it really is. There's a political party. The ANC is just out of control, and in particular in Gauteng. But we'll get into that in a moment. Something else that's out of control at the moment is the air travel in South Africa. And I had a chat this morning to the chief executive of SEMAIR, Miles van der Merwe. He's our go-to guy when it comes to anything to do with the airline industry. And the last time we spoke, it was all about Safair's ownership from Ireland, which everybody now knows is the case. It also gives them access to far, far more finance and capital than the South African operations have. But Miles says there is a direct connection between the pilot strike today and the inability of the authorities to address this, not even an open secret. It's well known now. It needs to be addressed. In other words, what he's saying is you've got to have one set of rules for everyone. The fact that you don't have a set of rules for all, and that you're letting somebody get away with what Safair has been getting away with, means that they've been able to bring in the capital and dominate the South African market, and then not leave any space for fresh new competitors. It's an interesting interview, which the full part is on BizNews TV, but let's pick up one of the highlights.
So around November 2023, so almost 2 years ago, a complaint was laid by Lyft and Air Link questioning the ownership structure of Safair, which the parent company claimed was a subsidiary, and that's an Irish company called ASL. That matter is still live, although the ownership was found to be non-compliant. No decision was made on the way forward by the international and domestic councils.
So why is it relevant that it's non-compliant? In other words, that ownership of Safair does not vest in South Africa, but in fact in Ireland?
Obviously, the airline industry is a very capital-intensive industry, and having access to cheaper finance from Ireland and lower lease rates, it gives them an enormous competitive advantage. It allowed them to expand dramatically post-COVID, which wouldn't have been possible if they didn't have that ownership structure.
Is that not a good thing, though?
Well, it's fine if everybody gets to play by the same rules. So if everybody has access to the same resources, no problem. But when one player has and the others don't, then it skews the market. And that's what we've seen, a dramatically skewed market in favor of Safair. Which has allowed them to dominate.
How dominant is it?
I'm not sure. I think they're 60% of the local market is the estimate I have, which is substantial.
But now with the pilots going on strike, is this all the pilots who've downed tools?
No, there are a portion of the pilots. It's difficult to know exactly how many. I think Solidarity, the union involved, has said two-thirds, and SAFE has said a third. But it's a substantial number of pilots, but definitely not all. So there are still operating flights.
And what percentage, roughly, of their flights are they operating?
So we've seen the greatest cutbacks on what we call the triangle, so Joburg, Durban, Cape Town. Around about 50% of the flights seem to have been withdrawn. On less dense routes, they seem to have withdrawn fewer flights, and on very occasional routes, they seem to be operating the full number of flights.
And is there sufficient capacity from people like SEME and the other competitors to SAFE to be able to pick up that slack?
It does amount to a shock to the market. So we're seeing some days there's sufficient capacity, but peak days, and there's a shortage of capacity. This obviously results in increasing pricing, and that also quells bullet demand as well, so that the two kind of meet in the middle.
I guess the real question for those of us who get onto aeroplanes every day is that, often, is why now? Why are they striking now? What's the big issue?
It seemed in February there was a change in the rostering system that went from a set roster to what they call an open roster, and that caused a lot of unhappiness amongst the crew. And my understanding, it's festered from there. I would need to say there's a lot of detail that I'm not privy to. So what we see is very high level, sort of the headline level items. But that seems to have been the launch point for this particular dispute.
Well, I guess just be careful who you book with. And this is a 2-week strike, the longest already in South African history by the pilots. The concerns that people in the airline industry have is that if one side backs down, in other words, management or SAF Air, it could result in a spreading of the strike. So with the cabin attendants, etc., striking in sympathy or as a consequence of the pilots getting a better deal, apparently. Anyway, interesting times. Just as mentioned before, be careful who you book with. Moving on to Gauteng, where the issues around the Gauteng Education Department just get worse and worse. You will remember that there was a lot of media coverage over the Pretoria High School for Girls, and in particular a WhatsApp group of 12 girls, I think they were matriculants, who were conversing amongst each other. They were accused of being racist. These were white girls. And there was an immediate intervention by the Gauteng Department of Education. Those 12 girls were all suspended. There was nothing in the WhatsApp messages amongst them which had anything of a racist nature, and that was determined after a period of an investigation of, I think it was 3 months. But now it's got even worse. The headmistress, who was suspended over that incident, which was a non-incident, something that was politically contrived, is now being suspended again, but this time for something so bizarre that I can't really tell you. We're going to pick it up from the MEC for Education, the shadow minister of MEC for Education, the Democratic Alliance's Sergio Dos Santos.
Now you have an investigation, you have a disciplinary process, and yet again, she's been found not guilty in terms of the racism charge. But now she's been found guilty of the misconduct in terms of allowing her husband to do voluntary garden work at the school, as well as the not fairly following or giving the SGB guidance in terms of the appointment of the finance person at the school. Now, the SGB had chosen who the person would be to deal with the school finances. There is no indication from the department that there's been any financial misconduct whatsoever at the school. And it was a SGB decision, and she had experience. She may not have the qualifications, but she has the experience. And the financial records of the school, according to the school, is, you know, in part, there's no issues, and the department never highlighted any of that. But now to find someone guilty because the husband was assisting the school voluntarily.
They never got paid.
Never got paid to do the school's gardens. Now, the only fault that they had was that they used the school bucky to go to the local warehouse to buy materials to come back to the school to continue doing the landscaping. That's the fault. And that's where I find it very concerning as members of the SGB, as parents of a school. We should be encouraging school parents, the school community, to come on board and help the school. You know, so there's many schools like you've seen in El Dorado Park. Just before, prior to the new academic year, they'll go in and they'll clean up. Maybe they'll paint. That puts a bit of fear into people's minds now. Now, if I'm related to a teacher or an educator or to the principal, I'm going to think twice about doing anything voluntary work at a school because she or he may be found guilty of nepotism. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-bike cars.
A farmer?
What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about e-bike cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW up?
It was just a runaround.
Cool, cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Danay. Were they all out of Rangers?
E-bike cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Well, I used to live just around the corner from what they call the Sachsenwald Shebeen. It's been back in the news. This is the place where the Guptas held court about a decade ago. Let's pick up on that story. Last Thursday, the Gupta brothers' one-acre compound in Sachsenwald, colloquially known as the Sachsenwald Shebeen, went on auction. Almost a decade after the state capture experts relocated to Dubai. The family, which face arrest in South Africa, is even not allowed back into their native India. In 2022, they were arrested in Dubai, but the South African authorities bungled the paperwork, and as a result, the extradition request was rejected by the UAE. Strangely enough, we've heard nothing since. But the Sachsenwald Shebeen's auction happened last week. It was once called the White House, and it exists on a prime property in Sachsenwald, which is a, upmarket suburb of Johannesburg. It's part of a business rescue disposal of the Gupta-owned company Confident Concept. Only one of the properties was sold, number 3 Sachsenwald Drive, and that was the staff residence, which went for a modest 3.3 million rand. The other two mansions, number 7 and number 5 Sachsenwald Drive, which are all part of the same complex, did not attract anything like the valuation. Number 7, which has 17 ensuite bedrooms, a cinema, and a salon, was valued at 36.8 million rand. It attracted a bid of just 3 million rand. That bid was rejected. Number 5, Sachsenwald Drive, is a 3-story, 8-bedroomed mansion with an indoor pool. It's valued at nearly 22 million rand. It attracted a bid of 4 million rand. But had that bidder gone a single million rand higher, they would have got it. The reserve, apparently, was 5 million rand. The Guptas are alleged to have engineered the pillaging of hundreds of billions of rand from Eskom and Transnet, money that South African taxpayers continue to pump into those parastatals. The family bossed SA President Jacob Zuma around, appointed cabinet ministers, and even attempted the creation of a media empire through a daily newspaper called The New Age, and a television news channel, ANN7. Apart from Zuma, other associates of theirs identified in the Zondo Commission still remain at large here in South Africa, some even serving in Parliament in Zuma's MK party and, would you believe, Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet. Last week's auction was part of a winding down process for the Guptas, who seem to be living quite comfortably now in Dubai.
What a story. Well, let's see if that extradition ever occurs. I wouldn't be putting any money on it. We now move over to another area of great interest, and that is the Bitcoin purchases being made by publicly listed companies. It's become a bit of a craze now for listed businesses in the US and increasingly in Europe to raise money from their shareholders or from banks through bonds and buy Bitcoin as a reserve to back this up. Our partners at the Financial Times of London took a close look at this in the FT News briefing.
It's one of the hot trends in global markets right now. Companies issuing shares or bonds in order to buy Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Companies are loading up on these digital coins in the hopes of pumping up their stock price. The FT's Nico Asghari has been looking into this, and she joined us now to talk more. Hi, Nico.
Hi.
So companies have been buying Bitcoin for a while now. Can you talk about what or who is fueling this trend?
Well, the one name that might be familiar is Michael Saylor, a crypto billionaire, a crypto evangelist of this company called Strategy, who in 2020 started buying lots and lots of Bitcoin. He has a software company, but the software part's really irrelevant. He's just bought loads of Bitcoin and built this company into a $100 billion business. And after doing that, lots of companies over the past year or so have copied it, essentially, started also buying lots of Bitcoin. But now what we're seeing is these companies are buying different tokens, whether it's Ether or Litecoin or Hype token, almost you name it, and there's a company out there that's buying it. And they're doing this because they want to differentiate themselves, because there are so many businesses now that are holding Bitcoin. They want to stand up and say, hey, we're the only one or the biggest one doing Litecoin, and that makes us different and that makes us interesting, and you should invest in us.
Are there any concerns about the risks for investors?
Yeah, lots of huge concerns. The main concern is that the price of these crypto tokens could fall, could crash, and therefore the price of the companies could also crash because the share prices are really just trading off and are a reflection of how much crypto they're holding. But then there's a sort of secondary issue, which is that a lot of these companies, again, following in the footsteps of Michael Saylor, are raising debt and issuing more equity, tapping the public markets and using all the money that they raise to buy more crypto. And if the prices of the crypto that they hold falls, it's a sort of vicious downward spiral if everything starts to crumble.
Where do you see this trend headed?
Onwards and upwards, it seems. I mean, every single one of the businesses, the investors that I've spoken to has said that, you know, it's working so far. You buy crypto, your share price goes up. So why stop? And the aim of a lot of these companies is just to keep buying and keep the momentum going. Some of them plan to then use the crypto that they're holding to sort of become more into crypto companies, do crypto financial services or lending, which sort of raises the question of why, as a biotech, are you doing that? It seems to, at the moment, the trend is only going one way, which if the prices fall, it will be a dangerous downward spiral.
Nico Asghari covers cryptocurrencies for the FT. Thanks, Nico.
Thanks.
That was FT News Briefing host Jess Smith with Nico Asghari. We'll be back after the break with Glynis the Gladiator.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
We're bringing in a new little feature in the Biz News Briefing as of today. It's a tailpiece and something interesting and worth hanging around for. Glynis Breytenbach got, well, quite a lot of fame and went viral on this little clip, which is where she quizzes the G4S executives over some pretty shoddy performance on their behalf.
Do you do lifestyle audits on your employees? I don't know, pick a straw, whichever one of you is going to answer.
Oh, now remember, we don't do any life audit.
Why not?
We really don't have any reason to do the lifestyle audit on our employees.
I beg your pardon? Do you want to repeat that?
Yes, we don't see any reason to do the lifestyle audits on our employees.
You employ people to look after hardened criminals. Your facility looks after, it's a maximum security facility, right? So we're not looking at shoplifters. And you don't think it's necessary to do lifestyle audits on your staff?
Honourable
member. Who are, I'm busy.
Sorry.
And when I'm done, you'll have an opportunity. And don't make the mistake of interrupting me again. And you don't think it's necessary to do lifestyle audits on people who look after criminals like that, who have access to money, who are known for bribery and corruption? Are you saying your staff is above that? And if you are saying so, on what basis?
Oh, go, Glynis. Well, we'll be bringing you more messages of hope in the tailpiece, in the briefing in future. Until tomorrow, when, well, you'll have Bronwyn Nielsen in the hot seat. I'm Alec Hogan. Nice to be with you. Cheerio.